This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for this week's One Last Thing. Joining me for that is Brad McGowan. Brad, how you doing?
Ken, I'm doing good. Gearing up for the holidays here at my house. It's been a fun Christmas season. Raven season aside, I've been pretty disappointed with how things have transpired, but we thought this week's topic, we'd look at some of the bright side, and that's what we're hoping to get out of this one.
It's easy to just beat on things that are wrong with the team right now. You want to find more plays that Daniel Polilli didn't execute properly, have at it. Just go ahead and have a Merry Christmas mm-hmm. with that. But we were trying to pick some things that really worked out for the Ravens this year. We have three each. Actually, it's kind of hard to narrow this list down to three, but we want to tier them a little bit. And I'm going to start with the special teams play of Keandre Jackson, who's had just an outstanding year in a lot of ways hidden to the general public in terms of his coverage play. So he's made 12 tackles, 11 solo, and one assist among just 63 coverage snaps. Many of the punts and kickoffs, by the way, he was on, they're including those 63, did not have a return. That's not 63 returns. That's 63 times they kicked. As you know, a lot of punts, for example, are not returned. They had 15 of the 23 punts during that time are returned. I don't have an accurate number on the kickoffs. I can't find a way to get that. I probably could go through game by game, but I'm not going to. But we know Loop has kicked some balls out of bounds. He's come up short on a few that have been being penalties. So 12 tackles on, you know, probably something that's less than 55 certainly kicks is fairly remarkable. He's only had three missed tackles, so a 20% missed tackle rate would be high for, say, a linebacker or even a safety during regular season play. But on special teams, missed tackle rates are a lot higher. And so a 20% rate is actually quite good. And it's especially good for the first man down. So if you're the gunner or you're one of the players who's really penetrating on a kickoff, those missed tackle rates tend to be the highest, the first man to the ball carrier rates. And Jackson has had a terrific year. His elevation, you know, it was unheralded, and I never thought he really did enough in camp watching him to impact the safety play in a way that could get him on the field there. But he's totally earned the spot on special teams solely with his play on those units. And he's one of those rare players who is, I think, going to be able to maintain that in 2026 and take a roster mm-hmm. spot that is truly just for special teams.
Keandre has been has had a pretty remarkable season. I mean, to your point, the stats speak for themselves. But you know, I was going to ask you this, and you mentioned it, but I don't recall you mentioning him much in camp. I don't recall reports about him in camp, and he was really unheralded as a player, undrafted rookie that they brought in. And I have a vivid memory of the first week they called him up to the active roster of him making several tackles right at the point of attack. Not point of attack is not the right term, but as first or second man down on special teams. And it was pretty remarkable and very surprising, frankly. And for a team that we've often bemoaned somewhat the necessity they put around having active special teamers on the roster game in and game out, Keandre is one of the few that really stands out when you watch special teams and flashes making play after play after play on the ball. And you know, he's one of those players that really justifies that elevation, and it has been terrific to see him. And, you know, we tried to narrow this down to three each, but Jandre and his success is an illustration of some of the undrafted and unheralded guys they've had this year that have made success that have stood out across the roster. There's been a number of those, but Jandre is probably one of the more remarkable ones.
Keon Martin would be another one, and he's played special teams. He's had a number of contributions to drive ending plays in a couple of consecutive games where he saw significant time. So, exciting with his play.
Right. So I'll jump over and give my first. And one of the pleasant surprises, I think, this year has really been the play of Tez Walker. When the Ravens drafted him in the fourth round in 2024, a lot of people thought he was just a deep threat, fast guy at the combine that didn't really have a lot of polish as a receiver. And I remember specifically listening to your camp reports last year talking about all of the times that he just got beat up by practice squad type cornerbacks just beating him down and knocking him over, and he didn't really show a whole lot in camp last year, and I think he was only active for a handful of games, but he did have one target and one catch last year for a touchdown. Coming into this season, expectations for him were lower, just given he really didn't get on the field and he had a lot of polish that he still needed. But in camp, he really impressed. He, you know, was regularly one of the guys that have, you know, that they were glowing about after practice. But we all know, as Ravens fans, camp reports about unheralded wide receivers looking terrific are not to be believed. Yeah. But in the preseason, he looked pretty well, particularly in that Dallas game where on the opening drive, they spammed the ball to him in all manner of routes, not just deep, not just comeback routes, but all over the field. And he really showed up. And so, you know, early in the season, he didn't get on the field much, but his first two catches of this season were touchdowns. He's made a couple other big plays. And when he is on the field, he looks dangerous. He runs a lot of routes. He's been a willing blocker. He plays special teams as a gunner, and it's been remarkable, really, from his pedigree to what he's put on the field now, and I can only hope that we get to see him more down the stretch.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think he's been one of the standout players. Three things I want to say about it. First of all, the guy who was beating him up last year was Christian Matthew, who'd been in the league for a few years, but was still trying to, you know, paint his way onto the Ravens team somehow with his physicality at quarterback, but that did go on regularly. And then that was not a winning battle for Tez. That Dallas game in the preseason you mentioned this year was really kind of a coming out party in a lot of ways for him, because he'd done a lot of work to try and improve his ability to come back towards the quarterback or run routes other than 7-8-9, the deep post and corner routes that are his bread and butter from college. Does a very good job of stacking opposing corners. He's fast enough to do it, and he does a pretty good job, I think, of making it difficult for them to get back into position. The faster you are, the better you are at avoiding that stacking being undone, because it really takes a burst. Or it takes an underthrow of the football like it did against the Bengals. And he was open twice deep against the Bengals. The first time Geno Stone had fallen down and Lamar whistled the ball high, and that was unfortunate. Maybe in some world he would have caught that ball, but not this one, unfortunately. And then he had probably had an 8-yard window to be open on the long throw where he's covered by a trailing Dax Hill, classically stacked. There was not a way for Dax Hill to get back into that play early because Lamar underthrew the ball by a number of yards. Then that meant he had to slow down, catch it, and Dax Hill was able to get his hand and either pry or punch it loose, depending on how you look at that.
Yeah, before we jump to the your next one on the list, the other comment I wanted to make about Tez that I found really impressive is the way that he catches the ball in his hands. And he seems to be a natural catcher of the ball, the Dax Hill punch out notwithstanding. But with a lot of these explosive, fast, bigger wide receivers that maybe are toolsy that need development, the Ravens have drafted historically, they've often fought to catch the ball. You know, Rashad Perryman comes to mind. Early in Torrey Smith's career, he struggled catching the ball and became a good catcher of the ball, as he got more experience. But that's something Tez really hasn't been a bother to Tez. And you know, it brings up one of the, you know, frustrations that I've had a little bit with the offense this year, is that it does seem they have a lot of guys that they could be getting the ball more to, but there's only one ball to go around, and they just haven't been able to get into a good rhythm in getting a lot of these playmakers involved. But, you know, it's good to have these guys, and it's great the development that he's shown, and I'm excited for what he can become as he moves forward in his Ravens career.
Let me go back to another thing about Walker has been his difficulty getting on the active game day roster. And that's been a little bit frustrating. He and Tylan Wallace almost seem to be competing for one spot right now, and they've been one off, one on the last 2 weeks. They're both four unit special teams players, but what they've apparently done is they've reduced the role of Wallace on punt coverage, and they've used Walker more in that role. And they've increased Wallace's role on kick coverage. He's their number two guy after Martin and Hummel and Tampa in terms of kick coverage snaps. Whereas Walker has had more kick coverage snaps for the year as a whole. So interesting to see how they're pairing that up, how they're deciding they want to split those players. But I didn't think there was anything from that Cincinnati game, even though he's 0-for-2 on targets, that should have said, wow, we need to get Walker off the field. If anything, you know, he's the weapon you need to throw over the defense.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, Wallace had a big drop in one of the more recent games. And it seems like when he's on the field offensively in a lot of ways, it's because they value his blocking. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. the running backs haven't been able to get into the second level to take advantage of some of that as much as they did last year. So, you know, for my money, I would prefer to see Walker a lot more and see what he can do down the stretch.
All right, let's go to my second one, which is the play of Chidobe Awuzie. Very much Ronald Darby-esque in terms of the season he's had. He's just under 6.0 yards per target and now 471 snaps. I think that's more than anyone had projected he would play, 42 targets. So we came into this year, and of course Humphrey was ahead of him on the depth chart, certainly, along with Jair Alexander, who is dearly departed now, and Wiggins, of course. But the fact of the matter is he's fallen another notch on the depth chart by the fact that Hamilton has taken over at slot corner, which has bumped Humphrey outside and further restricted his snaps. He still managed to play basically half of the snaps or a little bit more. He's done so at a very high level. He's playing for the vet minimum. So if you're talking about value relative to cap in particular, he's been one of the real success stories of the 2025 Ravens, with the remainder of his tab being paid by Tennessee, which is just, I love. Anytime the Ravens could do that, use the position you are, the fact that Lamar Jackson makes you always a contender to recruit players from other teams cheaply. And they did a good job in this case. And I'd like to try and find a price that the Ravens can bring him back. The Ravens don't have outstanding corner depth. I don't know if I'd really want to get into a 3-year deal, but I think if it's a 1-year deal, I think you find the right price and you hope he's amenable.
Yeah, he's been terrific this year. I was looking up the numbers, the PFF grade, and he's the fifth best coverage grade out of 109 corners in the league. That's pretty remarkable for a guy we had very low expectation of coming in. I recall when he was in Cincinnati before he blew out his knee, he was a phenomenal player. And I recall I don't remember how many years ago this was, maybe 3 years ago, but he was one of their better defensive players. And so I imagine, you know, Baltimore had a lot of experience playing against him, lining up on the other side. And so they felt good about who he was as a player. And again, like when you're bringing in a guy with that pedigree on a vetmin contract, that's just an incredibly valuable guy to have on your roster. And to have him come in and play the way that he has, it has been remarkable. And it's been terrific to see him out there. He's also a pretty physical player. And so to your point about wanting to re-sign him, he's 30 now. But he might be one of those guys that could move into, you know, a safety / hybrid role as he ages as well. There's nothing to say that he couldn't. We've been talking about that for Marlowe. But maybe Chidobe is someone that, you know, gets signed for a multi-year deal and continues to provide value as can move over the secondary.
I would be fine with that, except I don't think it's where the Ravens' need is. I think their need is directly at cornerback, and having a vet to stabilize things along with what they'll need is a stable of young corners to go with that. You know, TJ Tampa is not what I'm talking about. TJ Tampa is hopefully an ascending player, but he's not a guy, you know, that I think is there yet in terms of a guy who's going to stabilize the secondary. And I think, you know, one of the things I'd kind of like to see is Marlon coming back in a safety role, which would change things further. We have to certainly hope that nothing health-related causes Hamilton to leave the slot next year.
I completely agree with that. And the other thing that we aren't saying here is, unfortunately, Baltimore drafted two corners this year that both were lost before the season for the season. And so we haven't been able to see what Kone or Longerbeam could become. And this is why it's so important to have so many of these guys. You know, the cornerback position itself, if you just look at the pure PFF grade, it is really interesting because Chido Bey is the fifth rank. I keep calling him Chido Bey. I don't know if it's Chidobe or Chido Bey, but anyway, he's the fifth ranked coverage corner. We're going to get into another player. Maybe we'll just jump right into this now. I was going to save Nate Wiggins as my last one, but let's just jump right in because my pleasant surprise here is Nate Wiggins turning into what we believe is a true number one corner. He's got a 63 overall PFF grade, so not quite as high as Chidobe's. He's graded as the 50th best corner. But I think, you know, when I look at his season, I think there's just a lot of really positive factors. First of all, he's been incredibly durable and been on the field pretty much every snap of every game, save for the second half of was it the Cincinnati game that he went out with the foot injury and ended up coming back last week against Pittsburgh. So he's been incredibly durable. He's traveled to follow top receivers. He lined up opposite Devontae Adams for much of the game against the Rams. He traveled to follow Roma Dunze in the Bears game. He's lined up on both sides of the field when he's not specifically traveling to follow a number one receiver. And he's made big plays. I mean, you think about that Bears game.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that'll change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. paid for by NHTSA.
At the beginning of that game, Rome Odunze was kind of putting him to work and, you know, taking advantage of him. And then Wiggins came back and really locked him down in the second half of that game. And the game sealing interception, or the biggest play of that game, was the interception he made covering Rome down in, you know, on their side of the field. And so that was just the way he was able to come back and assert his will in that game was incredible. And I just think this bodes very well for who he can be and who he can become as we go forward.
With you entirely. I think it's definitely one of the pleasant surprises is that his ascension has basically continued on track for a first round draft pick. And I think you're right. I think 50 is way too low. I'm looking at two factors. First of all, he's only allowed 5.6 yards per target, which is lower than Awuzie. He's, as you mentioned, traveling to face some of the harder tasks. And it could be either number two with no help over the top or number one, sometimes with more help, but either way, he's got a lot of island play outside the numbers. He's got a lot of back shoulder responsibility where he's on bigger bodies, but he's the guy who can do it to come back. And he's also
the guy, like, throughout the week that is asking for these assignments. There's been multiple reports about him going to the coaches and saying, I want this guy, I want that guy. And you love that out of your top corner.
I do love to hear that. And the other thing is, I mean, he's opposing quarterbacks only have a 66.6 rating throwing at his assignments. And that's the seventh best in the entire NFL. So 50th seems really low. And I'm wondering how the grading got to that point. He's been penalized four times. That's not like that's a tiny number, but it's also not like the top of the league already. I mean, there's guys who have been penalized 9+ times. There are 6 such guys. You know, four penalties puts him somewhere between 32nd and 39th most in the league. So he's towards the top, but he's not at the top. So I mean, I'm really excited by the year he had. I think it's a big positive.
Yeah, he's been terrific. And the other thing too about our secondary is our pass rush hasn't been, you know, it's been a below average year for the pass rush. And so these guys are out there really covering their butts off, especially, you know, what Chidobe and Wiggins have done this year has been great.
Yeah, great point. You can't expect to have the 1971 Orioles success as pitchers without the 71 Orioles defense behind it. And that's certainly true in terms of the pass rush and the interaction with the coverage. All right, I'll move on to my last one, which is the health of Ronnie Stanley. Just saying that, we should now reflect upon the fact that Stanley's hardly missed any time at all this year. He's trending in the proper direction now in terms of grades by game. It has not been an easy track to get there, but he's headed in the right direction now, which I think is a big deal. He hasn't missed time in a long time. And, you know, one of the things we've been looking to is to see whether either Joe Noteboom. Nobody really wants to see Joe Noteboom play for the Ravens because it doesn't bear any consequence for 2026. It's not part of the Ravens' future. But they do want to see Carson Vincent, that's for sure. And we haven't. And the reason is that, you know, Stanley has been healthy and basically played all the snaps. He had that 3-game stretch between weeks 4 and 6 where he played 36 total snaps and had to sit out a game. And during that stretch, he scored 4.5 points in 36 snaps. That's really was the nadir of the season. But otherwise, he's been very good. And his grades since he came back after the bye are C, C minus, C plus, C minus, A, B, C plus. Definitely headed in the right direction in terms of salvaging the season for starters. And he's, you know, probably in the top half of PFF graded left tackles. I think, he's had a solid year. Hasn't had a bunch of penalties this year also, which is a really nice thing. So I think the play of Ronnie Stanley and really the health of Ronnie Stanley more than anything else is one of the real big surprises.
I'm this one makes me really happy. He signed that big deal in 2020?
Yep.
And he got hurt
days later,
the week after he signs it. And it basically loses probably two full seasons of where he was a player. And he missed the rest of 2020. 2021 he tried to come back and then when was gone. 2022, he's still working his way back. I mean, he didn't start looking himself again until the back half of 2023. And it was a really long recovery. And it was, he was such a good player as a young guy early in his career. And to see him come back in 23 and 24 and continue it this season. I remember going into last season, you know, we thought for sure he'd be gone after the season. And to see him play the way he did and get the deal in the offseason, and it was a team friendly deal. You don't get top tier left tackles for $20 million a year. They're far more than that. And you know, the offensive line has had its ups and downs this year, but and Stanley has had his ups and downs, frankly, but he has just continued to battle, and to see him trending in the right direction is so terrific. And it's such an important role. And he's been such a, you know, such a core locker room presence and a core guy in this franchise. It's terrific to see him have this season.
Very, very positive. And I think we look at his impact. I mean, he changes so many of the sliding puzzle pieces for how you realign this line in 2026. First of all, there's nothing from his play that would tell me Roger Rosengarten is ready to move to left tackle. So I wouldn't pencil that in. And thankfully they have Ronnie Stanley signed for at least 2026, effectively in his contract is a 2-year, $44 million deal with a club option for a third year for another $16 million. It looks like year two should be a good bargain on this right now. I would not have said the same thing early in this year, but that's what you have to do. Yeah, data emerges and you look at it. And in this case, there's no doubt about it that he's improved his stock significantly since the bye week in terms of his play and his health. And then it also looks like Carson Vincent at left tackle has made more progress than was to be expected. I didn't think he'd be on the field at all this year. He has been on the field for a few special team snaps. He probably, I would bet, it's more than 50% likely that he will see a snap before the season ends at left tackle at some point. But his status as the 2026 backup looks really good. If you're gonna activate him ahead of Noteboom, then you're probably committing to him being your top guy as a tackle backup in 2026. And I think the Ravens will go out into the draft again, and their need will be really for a swing tackle, which greatly reduces the amount of draft capital they'll have to invest in the position during next year's draft. And they need some positions like that because everywhere else across the board, they're going to need every draft pick.
Yeah. They're going to have some, you know, much like, yeah, they're going to need to make some pretty important draft picks, and to have Stanley playing the way that he is and feeling good about Stanley. And, you know, Rosengarten on the right side, one of the honorable mention positives I was going to talk about was how Rosengarten just seems to be continuing to trend upwards. He's, you know, again, he's had an up and down season, but he hasn't had as much help as last year. And, you know, he continues to be solid. He plays every down. And so, you know, the bookends, it's nice as a Ravens fan, knowing that the tackles are looking good going into 26. So, so that brings me to my last one, noteworthy or pleasant surprise is Keaton Mitchell this season. To see him have the explosiveness he demonstrated in 23, have that back and to be getting on the field and making plays is just, it's terrific. He was one of the more exciting things to happen to this team just out of nowhere that I can remember when he took the field in 23 and just broke off run after run after run. And the national guys, the announcers were like, who is this guy? Like, this guy is incredible. And he was just tiny and so fast. And then to see him get hurt, how he did, it was such a bummer. But, you know, this year he looked great in camp. I mean, you detailed on your camp notes, I keep calling these out, but I you know, how he was their best player in camp this year. And he just was so explosive. It was befuddling as a fan why he was inactive so often early in the season. Mm-hmm. But once he started getting on the field, you know, again, he got the ball and he has that explosiveness back. He's hit, I think he's hit over 21 miles an hour on Next Gen Stats. His success rate is 58.1%. And I think you've mentioned recently that Gus Edwards had the highest career success rate of 55 when he left Baltimore.
57.4, so, yep.
Okay,
and 57. And go ahead and say Mitchell's, though.
Yeah, it's 58.1. Or at least that's what it is on the pro on Pro Football Reference. So I might not have the right.
I'm looking accurate. At Pro Football Reference right now. His career.
Oh, his career. Sorry, I was just looking at 60.2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
58.1 is correct. Yep, that's right.
Yeah, but and he's averaging 7.4 yards an attempt. So on a season where we struggled to run the ball and the offensive line has looked at times not all cohesive, he just continues to just be fantastic whenever he's on the field.
I you know, you wonder what his first 300 carries are going to look like, but Keaton Mitchell has 93 career carries at this point for 655 yards. I mean, imagine, you know, he'll never be a 300 carry a year guy, but imagine just doubling that and him being a 186 carry guy who had 1300 yards. So it's unreasonable to expect that he'd be able to maintain a 7.0 yards per carry average, but Keaton Mitchell has been terrific. You know, the one down point he had this year that I think held him back in terms of his on the field play was the tip pass that got intercepted. That was a bad moment in the season, obviously not something the Ravens would want to have repeated, but he's otherwise been outstanding. And, you know, he's been a guy who's been a good compliment to Henry. I think the talk is massively overblown about any carries that Mitchell is taking away from Henry. That's just absurd. They're a fine compliment. In fact, they should find ways to get them both on the field at the same time. I think they need to manufacture some of that misdirection at Cincinnati on Sunday.
One of my favorite media quotes ever, after the Ravens signed Derrick Henry last summer, I believe Mina Kimes was on ESPN and made a comment that Derrick Henry and Keaton Mitchell were the thunderest of thunder and lightningest of lightning combinations ever. And we didn't get to see that play out last year, unfortunately, because of Keaton's injury. But, you know, this year he's looked like every bit the lightning that we had hoped he would be. So, you know, I hope again that this continues down the stretch. Who knows what the rest of the season is going to portend, but I'd love to have him back next year. I think he's going to be an RFA season.
He actually, I was going to bring that up because he poses a meaningful problem for the Ravens in terms of how they deal with that. I think he's one of the players now that is key to sign before the end of the season, if possible. Now, the Ravens may want to wait and do it right at the end of the season between then and March and hope that they have enough time to get it done. But Keaton also, risk is coming off the table every week with him. So it's important that, you know, both the club and the player get it together. But if they wouldn't give a second round tender, no way, no how, unless something happened that we cannot foresee in these next four games or even four games plus any playoff run. Let's put it that way. So I don't anticipate that happening. But even if he basically takes a game to come back, has, you know, 12 carries the rest of the year that effectively replicate what he's done so far this year, he's going to be a valuable commodity. And the Ravens will probably low tender him, or they might not, depending on what they think they need to do with him. I think they want to try and sign him for maybe 2 or 3 years right now, if they can get him. And it's not an unrisky contract, but it's got a lot of upside, I would think, in terms of you know, who he could be. By the way, we all know he's not going to rush for 7 yards per carry career, okay? But the question is, can he rush for 5.5 to 6 yards per carry for the rest of his career playing with Lamar Jackson? I think that's really the question the Ravens will be asking as they decide to sign him. And they'll also probably have to be projecting a little bit on what sort of a receiver they can make him, because I think that's going to be very important in his game.
Yeah, and it probably depends on, well, I mean, again, like, we'll see what happens the remainder of the season, but I imagine if they fail to make the playoffs, they're probably going to make some changes in the coaching staff. Who knows if they'll have a new offensive system or coordinator. And so it would be interesting, you know, the Dolphins have been able to make Devon Achan their full-time starter. He's you know, basically a Keaton Mitchell clone. And right now, it doesn't seem like the Ravens envision Mitchell as a three down back. And, you know, to your point, we probably don't want him getting, you know, 200 plus carries in a season. But I think the durability slash, you know, full complement of skill set is going to weigh into how they think about him when it comes to a contract. So as explosive as he is, if they don't think he's a three down player, they, you know, might Well, I mean, I guess it remains to be seen.
It could, any team is going to look at his injury history too and say, this may not be the guy. Brad, always a pleasure doing this show with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Sure. I'm on X, and I'm just holding out hope tomorrow. Baltimore has a great game in Cincinnati, cold game. I'm glad I'm going to be on my couch at home. Ken, you're not at the game, are you, tomorrow?
Nope. Nope. We're right here, and I'd be there in Cincinnati right now were recording this and I was going to the game, because I don't think we'd fly out in the morning.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's going to be a cold one. I hope they dress warm.
I have a short video coming up, or it'd probably be out by now, in terms of playing in cold weather. Hope you take a listen on that. Other folks out there, thanks so much, as always, for listening. Please use hashtag Film Study Mailbag if you would. I'll answer any questions you have, or I'll consider as one of the options to answer questions is through a short video. And always appreciate your contributions. For Brad McGowan, this is Ken McKusick saying goodbye. We'll talk to you next time on One Last Thing.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.